Good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome into the Fast Lane across the Virginia Talk Radio Network. Thank you very much for carving some time for us today. It's always nice to be able to catch up, chat. We'll have some fun at 5:30 today with Dave Glenn of ACCSports.com and the Athletic Carolinas, and also host of the David Glenn Show. And we'll ask him about one of the big topics of the day in the world of sports. And there have been a couple of them that have unfolded. One is obviously the various approaches to scheduling sports, because NASCAR's released their schedule for when they plan to return, at least in the early phases of that. The NFL has taken steps to maybe modify and adjust their schedule and their schedule release, which was set to take place next Friday and Saturday, May 8th, May 9th, in that time frame. May 9th, the release, actually May 7th, when the TV networks were expected to get a hold of that. And some of that's connected to Dr. Fauci, who has obviously gained a lot of fame over the last 2 months or so through no intentionality of his own, but just trying to provide some context to the country on the role that sports play, the future of sports. And then, yes, there is a journalistic sensationalization element that has taken place with some of this as well. And, you know, I get it. You hate bringing politics in all the time, but the reality of this particular era, and we've touched on it before, and we're going to continue to probably have to remind each other of this the entire time, is sports and politics are blended together in a very unfortunate way. And sports and life are blended together in a very unfortunate way. And we try to provide as much distance to that as possible. We don't just make this a one-size-fits-all political tangent, but at the same time, there are areas where you can bring it together. And I forget where I heard this quote earlier today as it relates to sports. It may have been our buddy Gil Alexander from Vegas Stats and Information Network, VSIN. And Gil, I believe, is the one who had mentioned this, where he mentioned that in this era, it used to be back in the day, you had 40% liberal, 40% conservative, and 20% fell somewhere in the middle. And nowadays, it's more like 4% fall somewhere in the middle. Most everybody is firmly entrenched on one side or the other when it comes to politics and it comes to their political opinions. But the reality is we try to, you know, I'd like to believe I genuinely am in the 4% side. You know, I've grown up in an era where my dad was and is very strict to the right. And, you know, if it's conservative, it's great. If it's not conservative, you know, it's horrible. And there's not really any middle ground. And I love my dad, but, you know, tolerance not necessarily part of it. But the flip side of that is also, you know, my wife, it leans more to the left, probably more so now because she's really just not a Donald Trump fan, and more importantly, not a fan of his mouth when he tweets and speaks at press conferences. And even if you like the guy, and I can admit there's some areas where the country's been great under Donald Trump with the economy, the guy doesn't know when to shut the hell up. And not to go off on a total political tangent here, but it's very difficult when it comes to politics, to understand and actually accept that both sides may bring up valid points. But it's brought into the forefront here. And I'd like to believe that here on the Fast Lane, whether you are more to the right or more to the left, you're able to listen to us even when we talk politics, because we fall into that 4% where genuinely we try to understand what each side is representing, not just preach on what we believe to be fact. And maybe it is, but just condemn the other side. Because look, I've got friends of mine, I'll use this as an example. I've got a couple of acquaintances and friends of mine, and one is very far to the right. The other really is more libertarian, but just doesn't like Donald Trump. And that person and the person who's far to the right have gotten into clashes on social media. And it has gotten so heated that they have a difficult time speaking to each other in person. I mean, really? And I'm sure plenty of people know this and understand it. So I bring all this up to say, Dr. Fauci, to me, has never come across as somebody who's really trying to promote one political agenda or the other, which is admirable to the work that he's done and the clarity he's provided to a context. But there are outlets that will take one thing that he says and glorify it, not in a way to glorify him, but sensationalize is probably the better word that I'm looking for, to sensationalize it And people often lose sight of it. You may be to the right and you believe that Fox News and the Wall Street Journal are the be-all and end-all. And I generally read the Wall Street Journal quite a bit. But maybe you're to the left and you're more of the cup of tea of CNN and MSNBC and print publications that lean in that particular direction. But the one thing that both sides on the of the aisle do when it comes to a lot of sources of news and information, and if we were doing a fast lane, dead lane, victory lane on Facebook Live, you would see me pausing to vociferously use my fingers, two fingers together in the mock quotation here. But what you'll often find is there's a level of sensationalizing based on the headline that's going to prompt you to click, hence the term clickbait. And then you read the quotes and the commentary, and it doesn't actually reflect what's been sensationalized. So we will get into that after we get in to the top five at five momentarily. It'll be more of a reprieve from scheduling, politics, sports, blending it all together, which is just the reality of where we are. But of course, one thing you can always count on, regardless of your views, is Gano sausage. Country Boy on the label. Quality on the table. I was at the grocery store the other day shopping the exteriors, and yes, I noticed it too. Gano sausage, Country Boy on the label, quality on the table. It's also available at your local Virginia area grocery stores. Now, it is time for the top five at five.
It's time for the top five at five. Five things you need to know right now. Number five.
So here's a bad look, and you know me. I will pick on almost anybody on either side of the aisle, whether you're too far to the right or too far to the left. But the Los Angeles Lakers and the quote woke, end quote, progressive, end quote, NBA, not a good look. That they initially applied for a PPA loan and an SBA loan, which is eligible to people that make under that are under 500 employees. And Lakers fit that particular description. But really, I mean, I get that they rescinded it, but how exactly did they get a small business loan? And they got money from it, from a small business PPP loan, and then ended up returning it. It's not a good look. I mean, there's just no way around it. You're talking about a multi-billion dollar enterprise. A PPP loan to be enabling you to pay players that are in the high six figures to sometimes, in the case of guys like LeBron James, easily in the eight figures per year range, and you're taking out a loan for that? Why not do what most companies have done, which is to say, hey, we're going to have everybody that makes X number a year or more take a reduction in pay, and when you get over a higher threshold, you don't get any money at all. I'm sorry, if you're a professional athlete and you've blown through your money and $800,000 a year wasn't enough to keep you afloat and now you're stuck without it, too damn bad. I'm not feeling sorry for you at all. And if you're an athlete that makes even more than that and has squirreled it away and is just greedily propositioning, then, and I'm not saying anyone in the Lakers fits this description, but if you're doing that, have some context to the time in which we live that, yes, to whom much has been given, more should be expected in terms of their sacrifice. And to whom a lot has been given, the Los Angeles Lakers, big market, flashy franchise, very storied, arguably the most storied franchise in the NBA, to act like they need to be applying for a PPP loan is absolutely preposterous. It's a bad look, and it's one that easily should get as much criticism as we're bringing upon it here on the Fast Lane because it carries so much weight coming from us.
Number four.
Speaking of looks, good looks or bad looks, Roger Goodell voluntarily took a salary reduction to $0 starting in the month of March. again, you know me. I'm not one who believes this guy is the greatest thing since sliced bread, or the NFL deserves all this praise for, you know, providing hope and optimism for people through the NFL draft. Look, there's clearly a market for live sports. We went through this on Monday after the draft, and the NFL provides that, and they and other sport leagues that are looking to return to action as soon as possible merely see an economic opportunity. That's what I believe is at work here. But Roger Goodell voluntarily saying, nope, I'm not going to take a salary starting in March and continuing it through April. Heck, he should do this for the rest of this tenure. Some people would say forever, but he at least should be doing this until sports fans go back into the stadiums. Because someone who's made $30 to $40 million per year, and we know he's good with money, we know he's good at extracting money out of a situation, we know he's good at maximizing profits and earnings, I'm pretty sure Roger Goodell is also savvy enough to have done a very, very good and astute job of diversifying his portfolio and saving up the $30 to $40 million per year he has earned for over a decade being the NFL's commissioner. So he can afford to do it. So I think he should just come out and just say, you know what? I'm not going to be taking any money until fans are back in the stadiums. Because you know what? He can afford to do that. Heck, the owners of these franchises can afford to not draw a salary either based upon that. Yes, it may mean a couple of extra or a couple fewer trips on their private jets to their luxurious vacation homes. But you know what? They can still enjoy their mansions as long as they're doing something Dak Prescott was not doing a couple of weeks ago. The Cowboys quarterback, actually technically not because he hasn't signed his Tinder, franchise Tinder, not Tinder account activation, of course. I don't know if he's on that or not. But Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, he was not practicing social distancing at his gathering a couple of weekends ago. But the point is this is something that Roger Goodell should easily be doing, not just now and something that he should be doing going forward. But hey, it's a better look than the quote woke, end quote, quote progressive, end quote, LA Lakers and their PPP loan to cover their costs as a multi-billion dollar operation.
Number three.
We'll get into this in a little bit greater depth around 5:30 today. Dave Glenn, host of the David Glenn Show in North Carolina and the Athletics Carolina, also accsports.com founder, is going to join us then. But according to Jeff Goodman of Stadium, and he's a pretty reputable source when it comes to following coaching vacancies and openings. Wake Forest has not named their coach, obviously, but the two candidates that have emerged most notably are Steve Forbes from East Tennessee State, who's had a consistent run of success there, and Wes Miller from UNC Greensboro. I kind of get the feeling it would be Wes Miller, and this is through no inside knowledge of my own, but just the ability to meet with somebody that's in the triad as well. Greensboro is on one side, Winston-Salem's on the other. But to meet in a socially distancing era where it's challenging to get connected, and then the fact that Wes Miller and Steve Forbes are candidates for Wake doesn't shock me at all. Coming from the low major school programs that they come from, you could maybe call them mid-majors in the SOCOM, but the point is they're not the high major or the Power 5 programs. That means it's not going to take as much money to keep them. We know the cash-strapped times. We know Wake Forest ponied up a lot of money, anywhere from $8 to $15 million to get rid of Danny Manning. So coaches that have had coaching experience but are not going to cost a ton of money and break the bank initially could be on that list. Wes Miller being much younger than Steve Forbes, I tend to believe that, coupled with the fact that Forbes has taken East Tennessee State to the NCAA tournament for a couple of years, and they would have gone if they had a tournament this past year, versus Wes Miller, who doesn't have as much of a track record, but has been ascending and has had UNCG ascending, I would tend to believe, if you're looking strictly financials and saying that that's taken into account, to me it would seem Wes Miller over Steve Forbes, but both of them make quite a bit of sense right now in the era of the coronavirus and a lot of schools being very cautious on future expenditures.
Number two.
Here's one that will make you just cringe if you're a college basketball one and done supporter, and more importantly, somebody who wants more of these programs to lose players to the G League. Because this is according to Brian Snow of 247 Sports. He said that, and this is a tweet from him, quote, "For the college basketball is going to die crowd, why is Sharif Abdul-Rahim telling his son Jabri to gasp," and he puts in all caps locks here, "play college basketball?" And that's the end of the tweet from Brian Snow, college football or college basketball recruiting expert for 247 Sports. Obviously, the reason it's not just relevant to those that, you know, have an opinion one way or another on the one and done, but it's Jabri, who's signed to play with the University of Virginia the next college basketball season, whenever that actually ends up taking place. Here's the thing. Sharif Abdur-Rahim played college basketball. He also has the perspective of having played in the NBA. And understanding the difference, even though, and we snicker all the time, I'm not saying UVA does this, but we snicker all the time at the, you know, they're amateurs, they don't accept money element. Let's be honest, there's a difference between college and pro basketball. And once you get to the pros, you can make a heck of a lot of money. And you can have generational wealth that is just unprecedented. And we've seen this countless times, even local examples. J.J. Redick had the $23 million a year contract and has been in that ballpark, even though it's one-year deals. Malcolm Brogdon, $22 million a year over a four-year window with the Indiana Pacers. But it's still a business. There's not the same level of joy that you get in the college game versus the pro game. And yes, you have different kinds of headaches and egos at the college game, but you get one chance to be the big man on campus, know that you're in a program where you have a chance to win a national championship. Jabri at UVA, they've obviously won one with Tony Bennett. And if you're there for a couple of years, you'll probably develop into an NBA player that's appealing enough that you can stick around and have a very lucrative professional career. But it's not shocking to me that Jabri Abdur-Rahim's dad, Sharif, who played in the NBA, is saying, go play college basketball as much as you can and enjoy it. Because, look, here's the thing. College basketball will still get players who want to go to college, who recognize that, yes, there's an immediate financial impact that you can get just playing in the G League, you know, mid four figures or mid five figures in the, you know, $40,000 to $60,000 a year range, or much higher if you're one of these players that's a highly touted recruit and is going for the six-figure range. But you can still boost your earnings potential even further by going to college, being ready to make an immediate impact in the NBA, and yes, building your brand up, because college basketball will always have that built-in connection and fan base from people that want to follow the sport, people that are fans of the sport, and therefore you can boost your profile even further. And now it's going to grow even further with the whole name, image, and likeness rulings that are coming down and slowly becoming more accepted because the NCAA can't help themselves. More on that later, but...
And number one on the top five at five.
Here is a report that will just make you cringe if you're a Washington Redskins fan. This according to Kevin Sheehan, DC media personality, and he spoke with Ron Rivera, who documented to him that the Washington Redskins could have received a first-round pick for Trent Williams if they just traded him in October. Now, of course, it's easy for Ron Rivera to say that because he wasn't around at that time. He was coaching the Carolina Panthers in his last weeks there in Charlotte. But it is also a chance for him to absolve any criticism that might be thrust upon him in this new Redskins administration for saying, you know, for fans that say, how in the world did you only get a third and a fifth round pick for Trent Williams? But here's the other thing. If you're in the Redskins brass, cough Dan Snyder, and you want to try to find a way to make these guys look good and make Bruce Allen look bad, that is the kind of information that you would be more than content getting out into the public. And if you're a Redskins fan, it just makes you cringe because we knew all along that as soon as the season started last year and Trent Williams just wasn't playing and he wasn't going to end his holdout, at that point, his trade value wasn't going to do anything but plummet. And if you had the chance to pick up a first-round pick at that time from the San Francisco 49ers and you didn't take it, it is the ultimate sign of arrogance and it's the ultimate sign of defiance from Bruce Allen to try to just stick it to an organization that he knew was ultimately going to get rid of him by the end of the season. And we all knew the Redskins were at a clean house and that is something that they've done. But it also indicates that while they have an extremely talented defensive line and defensive unit, and while they've had an owner that has enabled this to go on, and yes, Dan Snyder deserves a lot of criticism for it, that those are all factors where you sit there and go, wow, that is what you're dealing with if you're the Redskins And meanwhile, you're in a division where the Eagles won the Super Bowl within the last 3 years. They made the playoffs the last couple of years. And you've got a Cowboys team that's clearly heading in the right direction based on their draft. And we know they have a lot of talent right now. Some of them are on expiring contracts, but the Cowboys also have a very short window where they can make a major impact over the next 2 to 3 years in the NFL. Meanwhile, the Washington Redskins clearly have issues. Now, do they have the right guy to get them through it? Yeah, you can absolutely say that maybe they do with Ron Rivera, who is a stabilizing presence with the Carolina Panthers. Do I buy into it wholeheartedly? No, given their owner's track record. But the fact that they had a previous president that was there for a decade and just allowed Trent Williams' value to wither and dwindle away, that's obviously not only a concerning thing, but if you're a Redskins fan, it's just one more point of enragement.
And number one.
No more number one. We missed the soundbite.
And there is your top five at five.
So that's the top five at five. When we come back, more on the name, image, and likeness ruling by the NCAA. But a quick point that I'll weigh in on this right now is that the NCAA is opening the door slowly but surely when it comes to allowing players to profit off their name, image, and likeness, and saying today that athletes, quote, will be allowed to appear in advertisements and can reference their sport in school, end quote. But this comes after a couple of days earlier, they didn't want to do this. It comes after decades of slowly dragging their feet doing this. It comes in spite of the fact that the NCAA has continued to say that they want guardrails up, which is a phrase I just can't stand as it relates to student athletes. And remember here, you're looking in or listening to, if you're on Fastlane Headline, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, maybe you're looking at one of my pictures, but if you're listening to us here, you are listening to somebody that is not really progressive, not really woke. But the image of this that I can't get out of my head, and this is the optics for the NCAA and their Board of Governors ruling, which trickles down to presidents of universities and the structure in the NCAA, that by and large, and yes, there are exceptions that lead schools and lead athletic departments that are not in this category. Carla Williams, African-American female at the University of Virginia. Gene Smith, president, African-American male, but African-American at the Ohio State University. And other schools that have been very progressive in their departments. But the image I can't get out of my head, especially with Mark Emmert at the head of the NCAA, is it's the white establishment trying to prevent the majority of African-American athletes who need the money from profiting off of their name, image, and likeness at a school and in a sports world where every fan that's not just living in oblivion understands that almost any high-paid or high-powered athlete with a lot of skill and cachet has been able to profit off their name, image, and likeness without even doing advertisements and endorsements for many of these people that own companies where they could theoretically pay the student athletes to pitch a product. And it's not a good look for the NCAA. Yes, they're improving. Yes, they're taking steps, but the glacial pace at which they're doing it and the fact that they continue to use phrases like guardrails, quote unquote, as though somehow these athletes need to be protected, even though they've been operating, and I don't mean this in a racially insensitive way here, but operating on the black market for a long period of time, on an underground market where currency has been exchanged for players to go to schools or even just playing and participating at schools for an eternity. And it's whites and blacks, because I've heard stories of people that are multiple races receiving under the table payments. But the point of the matter is, it's not a very good look. And before you get here, he's just a liberal. Look, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I'm a libertarian who rarely sides on the left, but it is a bad look. Is Dave Glenn in agreement with me? Am I nuts? We'll ask him on this, the Wake Forest coaching vacancy, when we may get college sports back, and what he's hearing from these conference commissioners, and the ACC revenue shortfall. A lot of sports business talk coming up next here on the Fast Lane across the Virginia Talk Radio Network.